For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
I just felt like it was a bit of a kick in the balls, to be honest.
It came a lot sooner than I thought that I would be the oldest player on the team.
That's all you got, brother. That's all you got.
The word of the day would have been hyper-realism.
We're bad at soccer, but we're good on a bagel.
Holding the high line with Rabbi in red. Talking the rabbits and turning heads. With questions from you and analysis. In your car, in your home. Thank you for tuning to Home.
Rapids fans, we have a problem. This is Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. My name is Matt Pollard. It is Monday, March 25th, 2024. The Rapids were about to draw Houston Dynamo 0-0, and then Scabby the Ref happened. The U.S. men's national team got their third straight win over Eltree in a final, and Canada qualified for Copa America, albeit with Moise Bombito sitting on the bench. I'm joined now by a man who hates Mondays and loves lasagna, Rabbi Mark Goodman.
Nice. I don't hate Mondays because it's day six of the work week for me. It's my last day. So I am on my day off starting at 7:37 p.m. When I come home from synagogue. How's it going, Matt? Everybody good in your world? Everything going okay other than the aforementioned sadness of Saturday?
Yeah, we got some snow overnight, Mark. I don't know if you saw that. We got another light little dusting. So I got to work from home today, which was kind of nice. I normally get that, listeners, but when there's bad weather, they say specifically, don't come in. You have to work from home. You can't come in. So that wasn't too bad, getting some stuff organized. We got a lot of content at Burgundy Wave coming this week from me and other people as well. Brian Jennings, by the time you're listening to this, listeners, I will have published. I will have finally had the opportunity to edit his piece on Lamine Diok, so digging into his background and what Rapids fans can expect from him, and then also
Brian is the worst retired Colorado Rapids soccer writer I've ever seen. The guy like made a big deal about retiring from covering the team last year, and you keep pulling him back in like that famous line from Godfather 3.
I'm not doing anything, Mark. He literally says, hey, Matt, I want to go to training this week, and I want to talk to Lamine Diok, and we'll dig into his background, and if you want to add stuff on why he's not playing and what that could mean in terms of his tenure at the club, feel free to do so. So in any case,
listen,
that's
good content is good content. I'm not casting aspersions.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I'm officially, Mark, I just need one more day on my A-Basin pass in order to break even for the year. So hopefully, with the Rapids having a 2 p.m. kickoff this Saturday, I will be able to be home at a reasonable night. I was up late at Dick's Sporting Goods Park into the wee hours on Sunday morning for reasons I'm not yet ready to elaborate on, listeners. But so that makes it for a rough, usually a lazy Sunday, Mark, after, you know, Saturday is usually up at the butt crack of dawn, go do my hiking thing, come back, shower, get dressed, Rapids game, and then Sunday is adulting or lazy Sunday. And so looking forward to top it off with day number 20 at the Basin on Sunday. Rabbi, how are things with you? How is, I know you mentioned the Jewish holidays and everything. What's going on with the Hounds?
Oh, yeah, right. Well, that's another thing. So I was working all weekend. It was the Jewish holiday of Purim, which is a festive and typically drunken holiday, but not if you're a working rabbi, because you can't do your job plowed. So I have, but it's the only, it's only only work environment. Being a rabbi is one of the only work environments where doing shots with your congregants is considered completely appropriate. But Purim especially, and another holiday called Simchat Torah, like, you can toss them back. But I had too much to do, so I didn't really get to toss them back. The Hounds are 0-3. The Pittsburgh River Hounds have not won a soccer game yet. Two have been on the road. That was one reason. The other problem that they're having is they traded, or they sold their best striker, Albert Dequa. They let go of at least one really talented midfielder, two really talented center backs, and they lost their starting goalkeeper, who was the backup goalkeeper for Jamaica, who was a wonderful guy. And now we're kind of like rolling with some of our veteran players who are kind of like cool midfielders, and we've got a good fullback, but we don't have a guy who's a devastating striker. So, you know, Bob will turn it around. This team usually starts slow, and the crowds don't get big until the weather warms up. So I'm not super worried. We'll see how it plays out. The Hounds are playing again in person in 2 weeks, and I hope to go to that game, except that my kid is performing in Frozen that weekend, and both of the grandparents are flying in from California to see him do that. So that's pretty crazy. Last thing about my kid. So it's typical to put on like skits and songs on Purim Day, and today is kind of Purim observed for schools. And so Iggy did something humorous for the middle school today. He his costume for Purim was as a British redcoat from the Revolutionary War. And in a semi-unrelated matter, he decided to, no joke, this is actually what my seventh grade son did. He read the Gettysburg Address in a Scottish accent. That is, and if you want, folks, I will post that so that you can see it on Twitter. But like, that's what my kid did for a performance. And it's pretty good. I mean, it's absolutely absurd and ridiculous. And he, like, he really leans into it, but my kid is weird, man, and I could not be prouder.
Rabbi, I thought we were esoteric Renaissance men, but I think Yangel might be beating us up. Really quick, Mark, who's Iggy playing in the school play? Is he the snowman or is he somebody else?
He's Olaf. He's the snowman. Okay. Yeah, it's well, there'll be video of that too. So the way they do kid musicals is there's always a junior version of a musical where they kind of like either make up new songs or like spread the songs out and the lines out to more people so kids get bigger roles. So Olaf is a slightly smaller role than it would have otherwise been, but he's got the big number, you know, the in summer. Bees that buzz, kids will blow dandelion fuzz, and I'll be doing whatever snow does in summer. And he owns it. He's all over it. So it's going to be... It's going to be a wild, wild month in the Goodman family.
Okay, Mark. So a banter topic that we have here today that happened spontaneously from a conversation I had with a few other members of No One Good FC in the Colorado Rapids press box. And then I decided to post about it on Twitter. And then it got some nice discussion. Mark, how do we feel about the Colorado Rapids, the history of the mascots? We obviously have Rapid Man, who is back. The original Rapid Man, who had more of an ice blue as opposed to the white waves of his hair, of Rapid Man 2.0, debuted in 1996. We then got a rebrand of Rapid Man. And then in 2007, as part of the Rapids moving into Dick's Sporting Goods Park, we got four mascots that all had wilderness, outdoor, Colorado themes. We had Edson the Eagle, and then he was accompanied by Marco Van Bison. He was an American bison. And then we had Jorge El Mapache, which is Spanish for raccoon. And then we had Franz, F-R-A-N-Z. So just like Franz Taylor, I believe, Mark. Franz the Fox. And they debuted in 1997. They were sparingly seen in my time covering the club, Mark. So we need somebody who goes back more than probably, what, 12 years at this point to know when Edson and his posse, his entourage, ended up leaving. And then we saw Edson a few times. We saw Rapid Man a few times. And then Rapid Man formally made his full-time come back to the club in the year 2020. And so, Rabbi, I know you were not much of a Game of Thrones guy and everything, but so there's a theme that we have between two kind of religious sects. The show doesn't go into a whole lot of detail about it. I won't go full down the lore for people who haven't read the books, because the people who've read the books already know, and the people who haven't read the books probably don't care. But so, Mark, there's some old gods, and then there's some new gods. old gods somewhat connected to these things called weirwood trees, which are like the, what's the tree character from Pocahontas, and it's got a face in it, but it doesn't actually talk, but there's magical properties associated with it. So, Mark, there's always the question of, you know, do you pray to the old gods or the new? And then some people prefer the old gods or the new. And then, of course, Mark is, you know, as, you know, with Hello Darkness, My Old Friend, on some level, you know, we acknowledge the god of death here on Holy the High Line. But, Mark, old god, new gods, where are you on the Rapid Man, Edson the Eagle debate? And I should say, semi-canonically, I tagged Way of Rapid Man on this on Twitter, to which then Way of Rapid Man responded, from the eagle of the sky, the bison, raccoons, and foxes of our great land, all are welcome who love our burgundy and blue. So I haven't gotten an official statement from the club on this, Mark, but according to Way of Rapid Man, there is no false prophet amongst the five that we have available to us.
So when my kids were little and we went to Rapids games, there was only Edson. And I was, telling Matt before we started we clicked the record button that, like, I loved the idea of four mascots, because when you have little kids and they're only at a sporting event for the mascots, they want to see the mascot. And if there's only literally one guy in a suit at the stadium, it's a real pain in the butt. We used to take Iggy to Rockies games. And when he was a little tiny guy, you know, there's a line to go talk to and get a picture with Dinger, who's the mascot for the Rockies, for those who don't know. And the line can last you two or three innings worth of baseball, right? So you pay for a ticket to go watch the Rockies and you spend half the game waiting in line to see a mascot. I don't know if you know this, Matt, but if they put four guys in Dinger costumes around the stadiums, no one would be the wiser. Nobody would know. So the idea that the Rapids came up with was, let's put four guys in mascot costumes and then stash them around the stadium. However, in my life of following the Colorado Rapids, which began in 2013, they never had all four guys in the costumes. They only had Edson in, like, 2013. The other three costumes were kind of buried in a back closet. And my assumption of that was DSG, KSE was too cheap to pay four guys to stand in the heat all afternoon. They might as well just pay one. You know, fans, like, Edson wasn't that exciting a mascot on some level. And there's a lot of kind of, like, nostalgia value for Rapid Man. And so bringing back Rapids Man was, like, a big cri de coeur back in the day. And I was there for it. I am totally a fan of bringing back Rapids Man. I remember when they brought him back, it was really when things were way off the rails for the club. I think it was around 2019 that he came back. That was when, like, all hope was lost. It was in the depths of the Anthony Hudson era when the team could not find a win with a flashlight and a compass and a map. So that is the good thing about Rapid Man. I'm happy about Rapid Man. Long live Rapid Man. I'm a fan, but I would love it if they would bring back as a cameo Marco Van Bison, because I always wanted to see him in person and never got to meet him.
I'm distinctly, if you're asking which god I pray to, Mark, Rapid Man is the older one. He is one of the best OG MLS mascots. He's one of the most, you know, WTF, like, he's so weird and horrifying, but now it's been so long that, like, he's retro and cool and fun. So he's entering the same S tier level of, like, the Philadelphia Phillies mascot, the green, like, almost like, you know, Muppet kind of character, you know, that we have. He's in, like, he's approaching the same territory of, like, Big Red, the Western Kentucky mascot. And obviously, you know, Gritty's got decades of sobriety that needs to happen before Gritty of the Philadelphia Flyers enter that as well. But I didn't mind them, and I thought it was a really good, the animal mascots with a really good connection to nature, just like how Rapid Man was, but in a less esoteric way, in a way that probably horrifies fewer three-year-olds, which is generally a good thing as well. So, you know, there's a lot of, you know, I would have loved, Mark, had any of those four been around for the 14er kit that talked about conservation and, you know, education around trail management and everything, to then tie that into, you know, we've got bald eagles, and there was a point where there were bald eagles in the Arsenal Natural Refuge, which was not always environmentally a good place for them to be. And then we have bison, and obviously there's been periods in which the United States as a country has not been very, very good for their population, but now we represent them, and if they could have done something, you know, they could have had Chip come out to a game with Marco Van Bison, that would have been fun. And, you know, Foxes, Trash Pandas, always fun as well. So I wouldn't be opposed to if they brought like all five of them back, or had like Rapid Man and like other appearances when it made more sense to have Edson back. I suppose in theory, Mark, if the main concern about why we went from Rapid Man to the four and then just Edson was mostly about money, because they didn't want to have to pay, you know, most teams only have one mascot. You don't want to pay four times that in order to do it. You could just have the guy who does Rapid Man rotate out for the other events between the five costume suits and everything. And as long as he remembers who he is, he could do that as well. So I wouldn't be opposed to them bringing them back, but I think absolutely you don't do that if that means getting rid of Rapid Man. I think if we were to do a vote between the two, obviously, I don't know if there's anybody who hates all five of them, but I think if we have to choose between the one and the five, the one and the four, we're probably choosing Rapid Man over Edson and Friends. That probably gets a plurality. I don't think there's any question. If you only get one of the five, Rapid Man's winning a super majority of that as well. You know, that's a weird to bring up politics here, Mark, but you know, it was like the, when it was polling, when it was like Donald Trump and then DeSantis had a sliver and then everybody else like had a small little bit as well. That would be Rapid Man, Edson the Eagle, and then everybody else. And yes, listeners, I realized I just compared Rapid Man to Donald Trump. Okay. Mark, anything else that we want to say about the mascots, or shall we move on?
I would like to just go on record as saying I would like nothing to do with that comment conflating Rapid Man and Donald Trump. Rapid Man is an apolitical entity who we love and trust, and I would give him money, and I would buy his products. I cannot say the same for any aforementioned individuals.
Yes, and I would say Rapid Man, absolutely, Jack. I spoke to Rapid Man briefly at the team kickoff party, listeners, and I asked him, he had me guess how many push-ups he was doing a day in the off-season. So we were right around 250. So Rapid Man, Mark, you know, has existed since, what, April, May of 1996? And I think even in the hiatus period, he was not skipping the rowing machine or arm day or push-ups or anything like that. Dude is still absolutely jacked. In the words of Andrew Wiebe, you know, there's defensive nous in those cranial walls. Mark, this past Saturday at Dick's Sporting Goods Park, the Colorado Rapids played Houston Dynamo, and they lost 1-0, and it looked like it was set to be 0-0, and that did not happen. Only significant roster stuff that we have to talk about on this one, listeners. Lulz Abubakar came in and started next to Andreas Maksu, with Moise Bombito off with international duty, and then we saw Calvin Harris return to the starting lineup on his preferred right-hand side of the field. Oliver Ross and Cole Bassett were again in the middle together, and the lineup, as far as you know, was otherwise unchanged. The players who were listed as questionable for the Houston Dynamo were ultimately unavailable. So Bossy wasn't there. I can't remember the name of the other striker who was also not there. And then obviously no Hector Herrera, no Coco Carrasquilla available as well. Mark, I thought the pressing was a lot better in this game. It made it harder for Houston to build out of the back. It led to turnovers, which then led to transition moments. It didn't necessarily lead to high quality opportunities, because the Rapids throughout this game fumbled the bag in the final third. That being said, they did not press as much as they did previously, and there just were long stretches of this game that frankly were boring. That was not attractive, high energy attacking soccer. And the Rapids seemed content at times to only press in certain moments rather than be more pressy like they were, say, against RSL or certainly against Seattle Sounders. And there were times where Houston was perfectly happy to have possession without a purpose when the game was still 0-0, as they were trying to milk the clock down and just trying to get the 0-0 result. Calvin Harris had that moment, Mark, with Franco Escobar in the box where it looked like, or just outside the box where it looked like he might have been tripped up, but there wasn't actually any contact. But did he get enough in Harris's way to where Harris, in avoiding the contact, fell, and therefore that would have been a foul? Hoffa Navajo had a chance that got blocked. Cole Bassett had a couple looks as well. Maybe the two best chances came after the substitutions that brought on Jonathan Lewis and Kevin Cabral, and that led to a chance for Jordy Mihailovic in tight spaces that he shot straight at Steve Clark. You had a chance for Kevin Cabral, similarly, that he sent over the bar. I think Steve Clark got credited with a save on that one. Navajo had that nice little pick of Mikel, the center back, and then dribbled in on goal. But then Clark came off his line, so it wasn't a break. It was a breakaway. It didn't lead to an actual shooting opportunity. Lots of set pieces here for the Rapids, Mark, that didn't really turn out to be anything. There were a lot of shooting opportunities. There were not a lot of actual shot attempts nor shots on goal. Colorado Rapids prevented it with just 0.7 XG, and about a third of that was the two chances for Cabral and Mihailovic that I just mentioned for you, and then 0.5 of that was for Houston Dynamo, and I don't have it in front of me, Mark, but I'd be willing to bet most of that was on the Brad Smith goal in the 90th minute plus six. So games kind of sleepwalking through the second half, Mark. Substitutions kind of wake things up a little bit for the Rapids, and then things just go off the rails with Scabby the ref, who I thought lost control of the game from a management standpoint. You had the moment. I have not seen this, so I can't confirm this, listeners. I've seen a bunch of people who were watching at home who were in the stadium claiming that Escobar and Mihailovic got into it midway through the second half, and potentially there was a headbutt by Escobar to Mihailovic that ultimately wasn't called. I think it was a throw-in or a foul for in favor of Houston Dynamo. And then obviously you had the moment at the end of the play where it was a throw-in for the Rapids, and Escobar goes up to head the ball away. He is in position there, and in doing so with his arms going out, he elbows Maxu square in the face. He is, by the time he gets up back into the game after the Brad Smith goal, he's clearly bleeding. There's a shot at full time, Mark, where it looks like he's taken a punch to the face, like he's getting a black eye. And Chris Armas said after the game that medical staff were evaluating him, and it's likely that he has a broken nose. I do not have an update on him for that. The Rapids had an off day today, so can't confirm that just yet, but that appears to be the case. Ball dithers around at the top of the box, leads to a turnover. Houston goes on to the counterattack, and Brad Smith gets a breakaway and then buries it against Zach Steffen, and Houston gets out of there 1-0. At the very least, even if it was not considered a foul, Mark, I think there is a valid question of whether or not you could say that is a head injury. You should have immediately stopped the play even before the Rapids player collected the ball outside of the box from the header from Escobar. And then a bunch of Rapids fans, Mark, throwing trash on the field throughout the period after the goal, and Escobar, being the CONCACAF person that he was, picked up one of the water bottles and drank from it. So Mark, this game was kind of a hot mess, so normally I'd throw to you to good thing or bad thing, but I will give Rabbi's choice on this one because this game had no plot, and therefore neither will this podcast.
Nicely done. I appreciate you confusing the hell out of me and not giving me any direction as to what I'm supposed to talk about now. Totally fair, Matt. Thanks a lot, buddy. No, we've been doing this podcast long enough that 34 games a year we cover the Colorado Rapids, and every once in a while there's a match that's a hot mess like this, and it's like, where do we begin? So I think my favorite comment, one of the blessings that I have is because I have to watch all the games on TV while Matt is doing an amazing job covering it in the press box and being the only reporter who you can rely upon being at all 17 home games for the Rapids, unless there's a wedding or something out of town.
I missed the home opener, Mark, so I'm technically only one for two.
Well, there's that.
I've never been to fewer than 15 home games in league play, listeners, and my mode is 16. I don't know. I think I've probably had multiple 17 for 17s, but I appreciate the compliment, but you are technically incorrect.
Technically, how dare you? All right. Anyways, I just want to tell you the thing that Lloyd Sam said on the color commentary. There was a moment in the 31st minute where there were a bunch of really boring back passes from the goalkeeper to the center back, to the right back, to the center back, to the other center back for Houston. And there was a turnover at some point, and then it went right back to Houston, and then they reset the ball, and then it recycled back. There was like a 2-minute stretch where nothing happened and nothing interesting was happening. And there was no, and people were like not even jogging. They were like walking around the pitch. And Lloyd Sam says, and I quote, "What a game we've got in Colorado," facetiously. It was phenomenal. And at that point, it was like, yeah, this is really boring. Now, to be fair, that the game only got really dull at like minute 20, and it kind of only stayed dull till like minute 72, roughly. There was excitement at the end and there was excitement at the beginning, but other than that, it was not an interesting game. I call our listeners' attention to a really good piece by Matt Doyle on MLSsoccer.com today, where he does a deep dive breakdown of NYRB. And one of the things that Matt noted was that, friend of the pod, by the way, huge friend. We're big fans of Matt Doyle, and Matt Doyle is big fans of us, so we're big fans. Red Bull New York are no longer a pressing team. And he used data that I do not have access to on a website called Wyscout, which you have to pay a whole bunch of money for. And he was looking at a stat called PPDA, which is passes per defensive attempt.
Defensive action, Mark. So
defensive action, thank
so
you.
So crudely, the lower the number is, that is an indication. It's a measurement of how much you press, and lower number, you're a high-pressing team. High number, you are, you're in a 4-4-2 Sean Dice waiting for stuff to happen.
Yeah, and you're less interested in forcing a turnover and more interested in moving the ball around and creating openings, which isn't, so a high number doesn't indicate bad soccer, and a low number doesn't indicate good soccer. It just, it really demonstrates, your philosophy. And Red Bull have been a low PPDA team for a very long time until this year. They used to be first in the league for like 5 of the last 7 years. And this year, they're like in the middle. And meanwhile, the reason that I bring this up with relation to the Colorado Rapids is the Rapids are a low PPDA team right now. I don't have the numbers because I don't have extra cash in my wallet to spend on things like Y Scout, but, dollars to donuts, there's no doubt that the Colorado Rapids would like to press, force a turnover, make a couple passes, and score a goal. Now, the problem that I have diagnosed in the first 5 games of the Colorado Rapids season is we're starting to get the press, force a turnover part of that equation right. We're not getting the move the ball a couple times and score a goal part of that right. So the other thing that I wanted to say was this. There are a number of ways, like phases of the game in which to score a goal, okay? And approaches to the phase of the game to score a goal. There's a long, slow build-up, which means you start from the back third, you work through the middle third, you progress into the final third, work the ball around, and score a goal, okay? That's one way of scoring. Pretty standard way of playing. If you want the best example of this in Major League Soccer, SKC have always been a possession-based, let's make lots of passes, let's work our way up the pitch kind of way. Also, by the way, more or less, that was our previous manager's philosophy, which was we're going to switch the point of attack, we're going to move the ball around, we're going to discombobulate the defense, and we're going to get an opening. Okay. Then there's scoring in transition, which means you're going to force a turnover in the middle third of the pitch, and then rush down to the other end while they're not really reset on defense before they can reset and switch from offense to defense and score a goal quickly by getting into the final third quickly and getting a goal. So there's transition, there's slow build up, there's playing direct, which means you bomb balls over the top and you hope to get lucky. And usually that goes with also bunkering, right? Like you play deep, you defend, and you're not really worried. You're just trying to, you know, hit the lottery with Hail Marys. There's what I call long, long, short, which is really more of a throw ball kind of theory, which is that you're bombing long balls, and then you're creating space underneath, and then you're working balls underneath short because the team is assuming that you're going to play long. So there's long, long, short also. And then there's this philosophy, which the Rapids are using under Chris Armas, which is effectively, let's take the ball in the final third, and let's ram it down their throat and score a quick goal. Okay. And like I said, we are taking the ball well in the final third. We are not ramming it down their throat for a goal. So in the 17th minute, they created a great turnover that resulted in a foul on, the foul was against, either Calvin Harris or, Sam Vines. I think it was against Sam Vines.
And then they had a free kick. I think it was Vines.
And then they had a free kick and nothing happened. In the 21st minute, they had a final third press that resulted in a turnover, but then they worked the ball around and didn't have a shot and turned over the ball. And you have a couple more of those moments throughout the game where the team created the turnover, but didn't create the offense because they didn't do the right thing in the final third. My take on the Colorado Rapids, and then I'll turn it back to Matt because I have more things to say, but, I just wanted to make this point more importantly on the podcast. I think the Colorado Rapids have a good sense of pressing in the final third. I have seen that for 4 games. I don't think they know what to do with the ball when they turn it over in the final third. And I don't think they work the ball in fast enough. Or, and this is another thing, I don't think Rafael Navajo is getting on the end of balls that are, or being in the right place to do something with the ball. I don't think Georgi Mihailovic is doing a good job in the final third on a quick turnover of being involved in the play. Cole Bassett's kind of there. The wingers are bending in those crosses. But other than that, the team's not, and Calvin Harris made some nice moves this game, but I don't think the team has quite figured out how to score goals in Armas's system. And what that means is, if you're creating pressure in the final third and getting turnovers, but you're not scoring goals, then you're not doing anything. Because if that's your offensive mentality, then what we have is the ability to create turnovers, which is annoying, but not the ability to score goals. Which, you know, I mean, force all the turnovers you want, but if the opponent is going to score and you're not going to score, you're going to lose.
Mark, completely agree with your diagnosis. I had a bunch of notes that were in my rundown that were saying a lot of the similar things. I think, listeners, if you want to go back and watch the highlights, I don't know if this is on the 15th minute, but if you pull up the full highlight on Apple TV and you go to the 62nd minute, there's a point where Navajo and Harris combine to create a turnover, and then Harris ends up playing Navajo in on goal. And then a defender starts to catch up, and Navajo's kind of dribbled himself into a slightly tough angle by his standards, and he chooses to square it to Harris. So, and like, that is a Mark, do you remember the the breakaway that Kevin Cabral had last year where he chose to square to try and find, I think, Michael Barrios? Because like, and that was like the, okay, that perfectly sums up where he is at and where the team's offense is at. And so that moment, I think, perfectly summed it up. You know, I would say like the touches were heavy. I don't know if there were creative ideas when there was a decision to make that usually involved passing it to a teammate rather than go on your own. That decision was made a little bit too late. Bassett had that. Mihailovic did that several times as well. Like, so to your point, you know, the pressing has looked way better in the last two games, certainly against Houston and against Seattle. So where our complaints after RSL and after Nashville were that they're doing a good job of pressing to stymie the opponent building out of the back. If the opponent wants to possess the ball and then play back to the goalkeeper and then play to the center back and move it around and trying to find space forward and take their time, the Rapids from game three were doing a good job of disrupting that. Game four and game five, they've done a very good job of making the opponent uncomfortable in possession and recognizing pressing triggers and then moving in unison to anticipate the opponent's path for how they move the ball around in the phase of play to then create a turnover. What they do once they win the ball, Mark, they are like, it's like that quote from Dark Knight where it's like, you know, I'm like a dog chasing cars. I wouldn't know what to do if I caught one. And I don't know how to summarize the state of Rafael Navajo and his lack of goal scoring and maybe the lack of confidence behind that than having a chance, having to take a sharp angle shot. Can he bury it in either corner? Let me square it to my teammate for a tap-in. And in doing so, let me just pass the ball directly to the one defender who can do anything about this play. That summarizes where the Rapids are at from that standpoint. They need to get better from a decision-making standpoint, Mark. And so to your point, there's not enough of those moments that are leading to the ball eventually getting to Navajo for a chance to shoot. And that's also not happening in possession. And I think the first person, there's a lot of things that we can point to for that, but the first person that we'll point it to is Georgi Mihailovic. In fact, Mark, I'll throw this on at the end of the audio, folks. I'll throw up the full audio from the call with Georgi. The way that he starts the press conference, I think, is really interesting because I think he tries to make a joke to get a sense of the temperature in the room, but also then maybe diffuse some of the pressure in it. And then the way that he reacts to my first question, I think, is really telling. I thought he came off better in that interview. I think he's aware of the issues. He's accepting responsibility. Whether or not he can play better is a valid question, though, Mark. He's accepted more responsibility and shown more frustration at himself for the failures of the team in the attack in ways that Yunus Nnamdi never did, in ways that Yannick Bolli never did. I don't know if we ever had time to speak to Stefan Aigner about that, Mark. So that's not automatically a step in the right direction. That's without saying Georgi needs to play a lot better. Omir Fernandez, Rafa Navajo need to play better as well. Yeah. I'll just throw in a few other things, Mark. Other good things that I had. Kamani Stewart-Baines, KSB, made his first team debut, and this was after getting minutes in two straight Rapids 2 games, including the Azteca Open Cup match, and he did not immediately look out of sorts. So my first judgment of a draft pick or of a rookie or a homegrown who's still trying to break into the first team is, do they come onto the field and not do they have an impact on the game, but do they look like they're completely out of their depth? He didn't do a whole lot for me. Positioning wasn't bad, but he didn't look out of place in there. If I was just looking at the game from an omniscient, like 22, you know, looking at 22 players from, you know, a zoomed out perspective, I didn't immediately notice him and think, oh, he's clearly the guy who's new or who doesn't know what he's doing. So yay, Kamani Stewart-Baines. Mark, I thought Griffin Dorsey and Sam Vines had some absolutely fantastic battles. Griffin Dorsey had that shot opportunity in the first half against Vines, and Vines handled it well. I thought Vines overall was the slightly better player. I don't know that either of them did a whole lot in the attack, but they definitely limited the other one from a attacking standpoint going forward. And it's great to see two Colorado kids who've been, you know, duking it out since, you know, what, U15 level maybe. Mark, do we want to move to bad thing in the officiating, or did you have something else to say?
No, I would love to move to bad thing in the officiating. So obviously, you nailed it, but I just wanted to mention the minute. In the 24th minute, there was that foul on Calvin Harris. Lloyd Sam and I forget the main commentator for this game were debating
Neil Sika, formerly of Columbus Crew, and someone who worked with Jordan Angeli and has nothing but wonderful things to say about her.
Oh, cool. He did a good job. He called a good game. He did commit the same. There is something of a talking point. I assume that like there's a standard book of talking points that the MLS Central Office hands down on each game. And the standard book of talking points for three games in a row for all the Apple TV commentators has been, these Colorado Rapids have a bunch of new players, all of whom are trying to break back into the national team. And I'm like, I've heard that for four games in a row. And if I hear that again, I'm going to scream, right? We would just like to win a game. We don't care whether Sam Vines makes it into the national team setup anymore. I don't care who GGG picks for the club. I just care that the Rapids win a game. Anyhow, all right, rant over. But anyhow, Calvin Harris got fouled in the 24th minute, and there was a no call there. And then, obviously, in 90+6, there was the no call where Andreas Maxo got punched in the face, goes down in a heap, and there's no call, and they let play continue. It's a good question whether that foul is enough away from the ball that at least the way it looked on camera, that you might ask the question as to whether a regular ref would have picked that foul up. Nonetheless, it felt like, if you look at it after the fact, that was an absolutely disastrous no call. You have heard me say many times in the years that we've worked together, Matt, that you cannot leave a game up to the referees. You absolutely can. You can complain about the refereeing. You can claim that we were hard done. You could say that the ref cost us a point in this match, and all those things will be accurate, but it's on you to score goals. And if you choose not to set it up so that you're going to score goals, then you leave it in the hands of the ref to give you a big zero. And that's what we got in this game. So as much as the bad thing in this one was Scabby the ref, I'm never going to hold referees accountable for a game unless the refereeing is so unbelievable. If listeners, if you ever hear me say we were jobbed by the ref and they cost us the game, you know it was the world's worst refereed game in human history. Like, I'm that protective of refereeing and that adamant that you need to make your own luck, that you can't do it. So we got done hard, but you know, if we want to not be done hard in the future, Pavel Navajo needs to get on the end of some of the crosses that get sent his way. He needs to finish balls like in the fifth minute where he did a great job pressing and forcing a turnover, but then he didn't get to the ball before Steve Clark, and that was that. By the way, Steve Clark's rat tail, hot trash. Do not approve of it. Rat tails are not good. Nobody should sport a rat tail. The only person who's allowed to sport a rat tail is an 11-year-old living in a trailer park. Everybody else, not allowed to have a rat tail. Steve Clark, make a change. Begins with you. All right, anyways, I'm done. Back to you, Matt. Your thoughts, bad thing, big thing, hot mess thing.
The MLS Disciplinary Committee announces today that they are fining Steve Clark for violating the league and the MLSPA's, flow and lettuce, I'm not sure, hairstyle policy. How about that? So Mark, I have this technically in my big thing as opposed to my bad thing. So to your point about not complaining about the officiating, Mark, I think we can all agree that, you know, that throw in from Keegan Rosenberry that leads to the elbow to Maxu's face by Escobar, that happens in the fifth minute of stoppage time. I think we can agree at 90 minutes plus five, the Rapids did not deserve that to win that game. that game deserved to end 0-0. So be mad at the officials all you want, folks. Be mad at Scabby the ref and how that was handled, and I'll get two more stuff on the officials in a moment. But fundamentally, you're getting mad at the referee for the fact that the game didn't end 0-0. The refs cost the Rapids 1 point. You can make that argument. The Rapids cost themselves 2 points because of all the stuff that we'd said previously about what's not happening in the offense right now. I won't belabor that point. I should say, Mark, I'm out on Scabby the ref at this point. Like, in general, looking at games, they have missed big calls that have led to issues. And the biggest thing that I'm noticing is the calls that they're making in person in real time. When VAR has gotten involved, typically they have gotten it right. We talked about that with the Portland game when they went to the monitor a few times and VAR got it right. But there's something about what they're doing. Either it's lack of experience, either it's lack of positioning. Julian Gressel of Inter Miami talked about that on his podcast, where he got a yellow card for dissent, where he was arguing like the games move faster in MLS than whatever league Scabby was reffing previously. Like, you need to catch up and part of being a good referee is knowing how to move amongst the players to not disrupt the play, but also be in position to manage and have a good vantage point of making that decision. And I think that goes for the linesman as well, also on that front. So I think they lost from a management standpoint on that front on the game, Mark. I have not seen the supposed Escobar head button there. My two complaints fundamentally on those ends, Mark, are how VAR does not get involved. I think there's an argument that the logic behind there being no foul or not whistling down the Maxu incident is that Escobar already had good position, and so his elbows weren't in, like, they weren't relevant to him winning the ball because he already had position on Maxu on that header. But where my follow-up question to that would be is that not a head injury issue clearly that the linesman should have seen and that you should have whistled before even that play happens to actually deal with the head injury directly? And okay, turns out it's probably not a concussion. You don't normally, listeners, you don't normally break your nose, have blood, and then also have a concussion. The concussion is normally more cranial, whereas those two other, the blood and then the fracture are normally in the front facial part that's more, associated with the muscles of your cheekbone than necessarily what's going on in the cranial cavity or whatever anatomy term that is for that. I don't want to say a whole lot on this, Mark, because there's still some stuff going on. I did submit a pool reporter question about that play, and at time of recording, I have not received a response. There's some stuff going on, which may not be the fault of certain people at Pro or of the actual referees who ref the game as well. So I'm working to try and get an answer. This would not be the first time that I've submitted a pool reporter question and not gotten it until one or two business days on that. So I'm waiting for, possibly there's some context of something that we're both missing that, the 14,000 plus paid referees at Dick's Sporting Goods Park were also missing on that front. That may be an explanation. I'm not going to hold my breath on that. And then the other thing that I will say, Mark, is regardless of how you feel about the officiating, Rabbi, can we agree, official stance on holding the high line? Do not throw trash on the field.
Obviously. I mean, anything, the fans need to behave because the trash poorly represents who we are as Coloradans. It poorly represents, it makes us look bad. It makes us look feckless and petulant and whiny. And like, for me, as like a person who makes a living as a grown adult in the room, somebody got to clean that up, baby. Like, there's maintenance people who got to clean up. And, that's like, I throw out my own trash when I buy nachos at DSGP. Like, I go and, clean up because, like those folks who make, $8.75 an hour to clean up the stadium don't get paid enough. And like, honestly, if we sent them home with nothing to do, that'd be great. But the reality is it just looks bad. So don't do that. Don't throw stuff at players like they did at the U.S. Open, U.S. Mexico game the other day. So, yeah.
A few years ago. I don't know that there was trash the other night, Mark, but certainly
when... Oh, there was.
I missed it. Game, I apologize.
Oh, they pelted him in the corner after the first goal. So, yeah.
Never mind. It was bad. Okay, yeah. Don't say the P word and don't throw trash on the players. I feel like that should be really obvious. And then so last two big things that I'll have, Mark. Mitchell Carroll of DNVR and then Jason Maxwell, View from the Couch, both had really good tweets in the aftermath of the game commenting on the lack of production that the Rapids are getting. So I'll quote Mitch here really quickly. I can't think of another team getting this little production from its DPs, adding Georgie's zero goals and zero assists in five games to make it much worse. And then the original tweet, which he quote tweeted or quote posted, whatever we're saying, quote ex posted, I don't know anymore. Cabral and Rafa, two of three DPs on the Rapids over their duration of the club. These are just league stats, I should point out. Cabral, three goals, zero assists in 30 games with 14 starts. Navajo, two goals, one assist in 15 games, 15 starts. And neither of those goals, listeners, are from the run of play. One goal is a set piece, the other is a penalty. One goal contribution every 6.5 games from two attacking DPs. You will never be winning. You will never be an MLS winning team with that. And then I don't have the Maxwell tweet in front of me as well, Mark, but then he commented on listing the other TAM players as well and saying, you know, who's playing up to the level of pay that they're getting right now. I feel pretty confident we can say that none of the attacking DPs are doing that. Cabral's not even a starter. We were going into the season under the assumption that he was a lame duck bust at this point. Every single game that Navajo doesn't score, I can't legitimize writing that check for $4.5 million. And as we said earlier, Georgie's taking responsibility. He needs to walk the walk. He needs to number 10 the number 10 rather than just, you know, accept responsibility and be emotional in post-game media availability and then with his teammates as well. And so I think the only player that we can say that about, Mark, you know, I think we can agree Maxu's not up to it. You know, Rabbi, if Maxu was making right at the max salary budget, I think we'd be okay with it. With him now being a tamable DP and everything, I think we can agree he's underperformed. If you're signing a center back to be a DP in Major League Soccer, like they need to be, you need to be competing for Defender of the Year. You need to be the cornerstone of what the team is defensively. I think he's been better this year than he was last year. I think he got better throughout last year. He has not yet achieved what he needs to from a financial expectation standpoint. And then the only player I would say, Mark, that is remotely close to that is Cole Bassett. We do not yet know what his cap hit salary situation is from his third contract that he signed that now has him as a U22 player, but he's the only one who's remotely close, and he's probably the lowest paid of these guys team we're talking about. And then Marquez, I thought, again, against an opponent that did not do a whole lot to make life hard on them, Ali Larraz and Cole Bassett were just fine in the midfield from a defensive mobility standpoint, from a win the ball back, from a progress the ball forward, and from a pressing standpoint. I thought they were good enough, but it's another game without Lamine Diak coming off the bench, and I understand the game state made that necessary for Chris Armas and everything. But, you know, it just every single game that he's not getting in the lineup, the fact that he threw, you know, he's been here a month, Mark. He was with the team, I think, February 22nd, off the top of my head, was his first training session with the team, if I'm remembering correctly. So he's been here a month. The fact that he has not unseated those two as the starting holding midfielders in every single game that goes by, that's an indictment of him or an indictment of the evaluation of him by the coaching staff, how they've gone about managing that. Somewhere in there, somebody's at fault, Mark. And if we're solely blaming that the player came in and wasn't as good, then somebody in the scouting team or the front office done messed up. And so I don't know how all of this stuff that's gone wrong, Mark, whether it's Navajo and everything, all of this ultimately filters back to Warwick Smith for me. And so I don't know what to make of that. Mark, anything else that we want to say, or can we end this recap and move on to other stuff? Please.
Yeah, this was not a great game by this team. I think a lot of the players you called out were relevant. I wanted to just throw out Omer Fernandez as just another, I wouldn't say underperforming player, but I'm trying to figure out his role in the team. He feels like he's supposed to be, he acts like he's supposed to be a shuttler, but he's also like kind of asked for the ball to be played in for an attacking position without dragging guys away with him. That happened at some point where he kind of played a 1-2 and then didn't quite run into the right spot. You watch enough Inter Miami and you watch guys make 1-2s and make really devastating runs into the box that like pull the defense away, aka Lionel Messi. It is important for him to get into things. It is, to your point, you nailed it, Matt. It is really important for we're going to get this name right eventually. Georgi Mihailović to get into it and to really have an effect. And the last thing I'll just add is, you know, Cole Bassett wasn't as involved in this game as he has in past games. Sam Vines hasn't been as involved as he has been in the past game. I think Cole's lack of involvement has to do with his moving back to being one of the two twin pivots in the 4-2-3-1. Do I mind that? Do I feel bad about that? Is there a better option? I mean, I hope Jasper Lofelson gets back on the field and is healthy, because I think he'll make a big difference. I think Lamine Diak working into the position where he's actually on the field and a better option at defensive mid than Cole Bassett might change things. I'd like to see Bassett up there and doing his thing. But I'm starting to worry about this team. I am not as pessimistic as you are. I'm not quite Houston. We have a problem. Season's still early, but we don't get a whole lot of relief next week. So I will say that, like, I'm not going to judge this team based on this week because it was an off week. They didn't play very well, and it was disappointing. I'm not going to judge them based on next week because I'm a little worried about that. But we'll get to that in a second.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Mark, I was at the tailgate on Saturday. I gave out all of the, albeit slightly small, stickers that you sent me in the mail as well. Tell our listeners how they can support us. What is the update on the merch situation? And can I get some larger, you know, normal size stickers to then give to our listeners? I should say every single person who I met, absolutely fantastic. Shout out to Bray. Shout out to, I'm totally blanking out a bunch of people's names and everything. I saw John Boraz. I saw Daniel Bonifoss as well. So shout out at all the listeners. Super awesome. Super great to see. There were multiple points, Mark, where I was talking to a Rapids fan, handing them a sticker as there was a Houston Dynamo fan on, like, right next to me. And I was like, would you also like a sticker from one of the premier podcasts that covers the Colorado Rapids? And they were like, sure. And then at least once somebody then responded by saying the best Colorado Rapids podcast. So not to turn this into like an us versus DNVR versus C38 a debate or anything like that, but the listeners showed out the love, Mark, and that was in spite of the fact that the stickers were smaller than I would have liked.
You don't even want to know how much I paid for them. Let me tell you, my business acumen is lacking. Listeners, you can be a supporting Highliner. We would love for you to help out with our podcast. $48 a year, $5 a month, $96 at the Gallery of Honor level, which would really help us to kind of make this podcast happen week after week. We've spent a little bit of our own money to do things like get the right microphones and get the right equipment, pay for gas out to training so we can get interviews with players, stuff like that, basic things. And just say thank you and give us a pint every once in a while for supporting the Colorado Rapids. Matt and I both know that we've spent way more money on covering the team than we have actually made money. I gave Matt the bad news the other day, which was, we may have a lot of extra shirts left over at the end of this because I overbought, which means we're not going to be turning a huge profit on this whole endeavor. And Matt kind of shrugs and went, yeah, but when were we ever trying to turn a profit on this? Like, we are not trying to become professionals at podcasting or soccer writing. We have no illusions. We're really happy to be out there and doing it. We're just hoping to defuse some of our costs and get a free beer. To your point, Matt, I wanted to say the most important thing, which is paid Highliners are getting the T-shirt in the mail for supporting the podcast. Folks who have gotten the shirts have loved them. They're really great. I've already gone for two runs in my new in my camo holding the Highline logo shirt made by Dwayne Brown. It's a great shirt. It's comfy when you run. It stays smell free. It washes clean. And unlike our woe-begotten pint glasses, if you wash it a few times, it won't, the decal doesn't fall off, which was really disappointing about the pint glasses. But anyways, yeah, so the decal stays on and it looks good. But our listeners have been getting the large 4-inch sticker in the mail if they bought the shirt, which makes them better than Matt, who doesn't have it. So if you pay for the for the swag, you'll get stuff that even Matt doesn't have. Don't worry, Matt. I'm going to mail you the extra stickers. But we're going to...
I'll give them all away. I don't need any of them, Mark. So
we're
going to
keep... Yeah.
Yeah,
we're,
so...
We're going to keep making the large stickers because they're great. And... we're going to give them out to as many people as we want, but we'd love for your support. You'll get a t-shirt in the mail. You can have the black, you can have the gray camo. I'm a fan of the gray camo. I think it looks good when you run. But the black is kind of like more like get ripped in the gym, like Rapids Man. So, and check out our content on holdingahighline.substack.com. That's also where you can, log in to be a paid Highliner. And you can also help support Matt by being a, putting a little bit of money in the kitty over at Burgundy Wave. Cause he does great work over there. Back to you, Matt.
Yeah. Listeners, also, if you want more stuff, so I know, Mark, we're going to do all the, we've got some leftover older merch that, like the In Mike We Trust, Michael Azira shirts as well. So if there's old merch that you got previously of that you want another one of, or you just want to know, email rapids96podcast@gmail.com and ask like the what old merch is available and in what sizes, and then so we can let you know, and you can Venmo Rabbi. We'll figure that out as well. And then also the if it turns out once I get the stickers, if it's hard for you to meet me at the tailgate or something, we've done this in the past when we were just trying to get rid of a bunch of old ones as well. You can email us and just let us know like a good mailing address. We'd be happy to comp the, you know, the $5 worth of stamps that we would need for that kind of a situation. So if there's more stuff you want, if you don't know about extras, if you haven't gotten your shirt yet and you're worried that it's lost in the mail, hit us up, obviously. And once everyone who's a paid subscriber for this year has gotten their shirts and everything, Mark, open season, what, $20 plus shipping for
something
somebody
like
wanting
that.
An extra one? So yeah,
we'll
so
figure
got...
it out. But we have about 10 shirts. I was at the post office for an hour and a half last week. We've got about 10 shirts left to mail out. We've got a couple new folks who came in. So, and then we'll have some leftovers. Most sizes we've got plenty of both. We found out the hard way, or I found out the hard way, that our people trend towards the medium, large, extra large size. Smalls are in abundance. So if you're a small person and you'd like to subscribe to Holding the Highline, we would love to get rid of some of these small shirts. So, yeah.
And can confirm they do fit the short king, says the 5'6" ginger. Okay. Mark, this past Thursday at Dick's Sporting Goods Park, Rapids 2 played Azteca and downed them by a score of 3-0. This was in the first round of the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. And then NoCo Hailstorm took care of business as well, Mark. So, the second straight year, we are getting in the Open Cup a South Platte Derby featuring this time Rapids 2 and then now Hailstorm as well. That will be on April 3rd, I believe, whatever, next Wednesday. So those are coming through. And then, Mark, I've looked at the way the draw is, the way that the numbers worked out. There were a number of USL championship teams that got bumped to a later round than the... So this next round, Mark, is all teams that are already in. And then whoever wins between Hailstorm and Rapids 2 will then move on to the third round proper. That will then include most championship teams. I don't remember what the exact conditions were, but Switchbacks got a bye. So Switchbacks are in the same round as the MLS proper teams, Mark. So if we look at who potentially the winner of Hailstorm versus Rapids 2 in the, you know, South Platte River Derby asterisk wins that, there is Union Omaha of also USL League 1 and Des Moines Menace, now of Sasha Kleshin, legend Des Moines Menace, are playing in another round. If Union Omaha ends up winning that, I'd assume they'd be divided in that geographic pot. And then the closest USL teams you have are Locomotive El Paso and then New Mexico United as well. So I would assume, Mark, that the winner of this South Platte Derby then is getting one of Union Omaha or those two Southern championship teams that I mentioned. And then at that point, it's probably a coin flip between whether or not they're getting Switchbacks or RSL. And I have to assume at some part, Mark, this leads to somewhere in the path, one of these Colorado teams, or if Switchbacks win their opening round, I have to believe they'll be in the pot where they'll be drawn automatically with RSL. So Mark, I think regardless of who we're rooting for in the South Platte Derby, I know we are rooting for a Colorado versus Colorado. in the case of the game with switchbacks, 2 rounds from now. And I know whoever wins that is probably getting RSL. So lower division Colorado team, probably at the Riot, would absolutely be another fantastic scalp for, you know, lower division Colorado team to win. But Mark, any general thoughts on the Open Cup? Are we excited to see the meme that is Amon Zayed back down on the touchline at the Richard?
The youth team that a bunch of kids that I've worked with here in Pittsburgh and so on, their senior team, Steel City FC, were down 0-1 by the Michigan Stars FC. So the lower league team from Pittsburgh is out. The Riverhounds will enter in a round or two. So there's like 2 guys I actually know on that team, which is kind of cool. That I know someone who played in the Open Cup, coaches for Steel City FC. So anyhow, very cool stuff. I'm excited about the Open Cup. It, you know, El Farolito, the best burrito place. Well, the third best burrito place in all of San Francisco is still in it. They play Central Valley Fuego FC. I'm going to be in San Francisco in a couple weeks. So that should be fun. I don't know if I'll be there. I think I'm flying in the same night that they play, and that game is happening in Central Valley anyways, so I would miss that one out. But this is just one of the great things about Open Cup, which is it kind of spreads the soccer love all over the country. You know, there's only 29 MLS cities, but a lot of these teams are in smaller places. And for some of these smaller places, like Des Moines, this is the biggest professional sporting thing that's going on, or in the, at least in their case, semi-pro. I mean, Forward Madison is in this against Chicago Fire FC too. And I'm definitely rooting all the way for the Flamingos. My wife's from Madison. Madison has the best branding of any USL team going. They have great turnout. They have great interest. And the other cool thing about the distance from Madison, they're going to have good, that if that game is on TV, that is a must watch, because Madison is close enough to Chicago and Forward has enough fans that will probably have a really good away team, away supporter support. So that should be a lot of fun if you're looking for other games to kind of pay attention to in that kind of run up.
Mark, I have to imagine that Brendan Plone's going to be doing some midday, night drinking at that game. Certainly is fun. Rabbi, I can't believe I haven't asked this. Is Noah a Badger?
Noah did not go to the University of Wisconsin because her father was a professor at the University of Wisconsin. My wife and her brother are kind of honorary University of Wisconsin fans because their father got a paycheck and a pension from the University of Wisconsin. So, they're big time boosters of the red and white. So, although Noah could not be bothered by sports, is not interested in any of the sporting events. Although does indulge me every once in a while with soccer, so it's good times. But yeah, big time Michigan fans, big time Wisconsin fans. My wife, however, went to the university known as Columbia, and was completely unaware at her 4 years at Columbia that they even had sporting teams. Whereas I went to George Washington University, who haven't seemingly made the NCAA tournament in like 7 years. So March Madness for me is rooting for my friends whose schools are in the tournament, or my friends who are rabbis at the Hillels at certain universities. So that's where I'm at.
Listeners, this coming Saturday, March 30th, the Colorado Rapids will be back at home at Dick's Sporting Goods Park. They will be hosting LAFC, and this is an afternoon kickoff for those of you who haven't checked your schedule for this weekend. It is a 2 p.m. Mountain Time kickoff. Mark, I am scrolling through the match center on MLSsoccer.com, and I'm just seeing that this is on Apple TV, MLS Season Pass. I'm not seeing that this is a nationally broadcast game, so I don't know what magical thing that wasn't Fox saying that we wanted LAFC in an afternoon time slot, or Telemundo saying that they wanted LAFC on an afternoon time slot, so I'm not sure what to make of that, but in any case, Mark, it's going to be an afternoon game. Weather will probably be nice. It'll probably be a really good day drinking crowd for those of you who are going to be there. The attendance probably not going to be great, Mark, because there's probably going to be a lot of parents with season tickets who've got stuff going on with their kids that's soccer related that just isn't directly Rapids related. Looking ahead to what LAFC has done so far this season, Mark, they got off to a little bit of a slow start. They beat Seattle Sounders on the opening day, and then they played in that snow game where they just got outclassed or out-prepared for snow by RSL. That game was 3-0. They drew Sporting Kansas City 0-0, and then they got Wally pipped by, they got mugged by Minnesota United 2-0. Mark, we haven't mentioned this, but like the Loons, despite being a disaster at the front office and the head coaching level, just quietly really good near the top of the Western Conference. And then LAFC really needed a result in this past weekend, Mark, and a 62-minute red card for Joe Willis saw him absolutely run roughshod over Nashville SC. This was a 5-0 game. Tillman, the other brother, not Malik, Tucker, I can't remember Tillman's first name, got a goal. Dennis Bwanga got his first two goals of the MLS season. He scored in the 18th and the 48th minute, and then Oliveira scored as well. I think he was the one who could have had a hat trick the last time these two teams played, Mark. And then Edward Atuesta scored in stoppage time to top it off. Listeners, you remember Atuesta, he was previously with LAFC, got the bag down in South America, I can't remember where, and then has since come back to the club now to replace Kellen Acosta in the midfield. So, Mark, if we look at this lineup, there's some significant changes in terms of main starters that you have. The back line is the least affected. You've still got Ryan Hollingshead and Aaron Long at center back. Hugo Lloris, formerly of Tottenham Hotspurs and the French national team, is in at goal for them. He was their big offseason acquisition. Etuesta and Ilya Sanchez are still doing it in midfield. And then Tillman is there with them as well, whose first name is Timothy. I apologize to Timothy Tillman for getting his name wrong. And then it's Dennis Bwanga up at left wing, Mark. Carlos Vela is nowhere to be found, listeners. He is technically out of contract and I believe eligible for MLS free agency, but supposedly, they are still in negotiations and trying to figure that out, or he's mulling over his future. And the last I heard, LAFC had not cleaned out or removed his locker at their training facility. So he still has a spot in theory there waiting for him. Mark, I was super impressed with what LAFC had done so far to start this season. I was kind of waiting to see when were they going to wake up, or is this an indication that maybe they're a little bit over the hill? They've got Dennis Bwanga papering up some cracks in the attack. They've got Hugo Lloris doing that as well. Potentially they're going to front load. I can't remember if it was Olivier Giroud, and then who's the other one? The underperforming guy at Barcelona who was at Atletico Madrid before. I can't remember. We're supposedly coming in to save their season, like how Gareth Bale did a few years ago when they won MLS Cup. But so, Mark, I wasn't impressed. I was wondering if this is an indication that LAFC is going to have a down year, and then it was just a matter of were they going to wake up, and if so, when. They've woken up, and I'm now scared poopless about this game on Saturday.
Yeah, I think that's the take that I had too, which is LAFC seemed to be struggling at the beginning of the season. The RSL result didn't mean anything because the snow in that game was so bad that it was hard to kind of figure out what that meant. The Minnesota game, I think you nailed it, which was this is a team that a lot of people said, oh, they don't have a coach. They don't really know what they're doing. It's going to be a hot mess. And they came in and did just fine. You can't take too much from the 2-1 Seattle game because it's early and Seattle really is struggling and hasn't really figured anything out yet. But the Nashville game, Nashville's also not a great team this year. They look like they're going to be below the playoff line if I were to kind of extrapolate out what we've seen at the beginning of the season. That being said, LAFC abused them from the opening whistle. There was no point, I watched this game, there was no point in this game where Nashville looked like they were on the front foot. That being said, conceding a goal in the 8th minute means you're going to be chasing the game forever, and that means game states is in effect. So can we take too much from LAFC's beatdown of Nashville? We can take some things, but we can't necessarily say these guys are like a juggernaut and to be terrified of them. I will say that at this point, I am fairly afraid of LAFC. I don't see a way that the Colorado Rapids can get a result in this match. Bwanga is has awoken. Tillman is very solid, and Atuesta is really doing his thing very, very well. Their kind of import from last year at the beginning of the year, Mateusz Bogusz, I thought last year was going to be a big time acquisition and then proceeded to mostly come off the bench in limited use last year. Seems like he's kind of growing into it. He had a goal in their last game against Nashville. They have Jesus Murillo, who is quietly one of the best center backs in the league, next to Aaron Long. It doesn't really get better at center back pairings in the league than that. The fact that they haven't been particularly effective up till now is probably just bad luck. But I think that this is an LAFC team that is top four Western Conference by the end of the season. There's no doubt about that. They've just kind of started to figure things out. They will probably abuse the Colorado Rapids in this one. Even though the Rapids are at home, even though they've got a nice day game atmosphere, I'm picking this one as a 3-0 LAFC victory. It would be great if the Rapids could nick a goal here with some of their high press, if only so that they could figure out how to, like I said before, high press and turn it into a goal. But I don't think they're going to be able to figure that out in a couple weeks. And I'm also starting to think that our loss of several defensive midfielders between Connor Ronan and Jasper Lofelson is bad, and it kind of takes us down talent-wise in a way that we don't need to be taken down.
Yeah, no, I have the same concerns as you, Rabbi. I think, you know, that being said, LAFC's come here before and been generally on a high. I believe, don't quote me on this, listeners, I think the Oh Mamma Mia, Danny Wilson scores a goal. I think that was their first loss of that season, when I think they won the Supporter Shield, whichever year that was. So we've seen LAFC be a much better team on paper here, Mark. You know, you famously, I think you were still at the Denver Post at the time, you know, had that headline that an editor, not you, wrote about, like, how doomed the Rapids were and how certain they were to lose, and the Rapids ended up beating LAFC. We've seen LAFC come here and sleepwalk through games. We have seen Ilya Sanchez not play well. We've seen Kellen Acosta come through and be invisible. We've seen, I don't know if we've seen Dennis Bawanga be invisible for 90 minutes. We've seen it from Carlos Vela, albeit he's not relevant, probably, unless he signs, like, tomorrow, Mark. I don't know that he's getting into the starting lineup for Saturday. But, you know, you think an afternoon game, LAFC coming in probably the night before. I don't think they'll charter it that early in the morning. And then even then, it's a 1:30 kickoff for their internal clock. It's going to be hot, but that probably advantages them. But maybe the altitude gets to them. I'm grasping at straws here, Mark. But that being said, the point that I'm trying to make is that there's been plenty of times where we have been the prophets of doom going into this game against LAFC, and the Rapids have been a pleasant surprise. They have elevated their game, and we've seen LAFC not play the way that we've seen them play at home or at more environmentally friendly road games as well. So I'm grasping at that, Mark. You know, again, we've seen, I still think even with the way that the game against Houston ended, in the macro, Mark, in terms of the principles of play, the how the players are working together and what they're trying to do with and without the ball, I still feel like I can say they've improved every single one of the five games from the previous game to the last game. If they take another step up in that, so if we're now, let's press to make it hard on the opponent, let's press to prevent them from playing out and gouging us like Portland did, let's press to get them to turn the ball over, let's press to get the ball and then turn that into a dangerous opportunity in the final third, let's press, get the ball, final third, shot on goal. In theory, that next step, Mark, albeit the biggest one, the one that's the biggest problem, the one that we've seen historically this club struggle with through multiple managers under the Rapids way, apology for the trigger warning, listeners, is that if they take that other step, if you combine that with LAFC coming in, being a little bit more defensive, sleepwalking through the game a little bit like Houston did, and also just being sluggish because of the nature of the kickoff time and playing at altitude, could I see a 0-0 or a 1-1? Yes, possibly. But, you know, I'll take 2-0 in this one, Mark. I think LAFC scores midway through the first half. I think it'll be fairly even in terms of the Rapids trying to match intensity with the urgency of the moment, given the scoreline and given the opponent. And then it'll go back and forth, and LAFC's quality will show in the final 20 minutes of the game to seal the deal in ways that the Rapids attack will not end up doing that. So we both got a loss in there. Womp womp. Anything else that we want to say about this, Mark, or shall we go to some Ask HTHLs?
Let's take the calls.
Okay, Mark, we've got a couple of questions. I'll throw this first one to you because it's related to the game against LAFC. Jody Robbins asks, forget about reality, who would you start next game? I'd sit Fernandez, Harris, and Rosenberry and start Lewis, Cabral, and Anderson, because why not? And I'd sub Fernandez for Georgie as central attacking midfielder. He had more incisive passes versus Houston and is a better presser. Mark, forget what do you think Chris Armas will do. Forget what do you think logically would happen. if the Rapids appoint you manager for a day on Saturday, who are you starting?
It's a great question. One of the questions is really related to whether Maxo has a broken nose. I've been thinking about this a bunch, which is if we're going to play. So here's my thought, which is one of the problems we're currently having with what I said about Cole Bassett being kind of too deep, is that maybe we need to get him into the attack. This would be like a one-time fix kind of situation. I wouldn't recommend switching to this formation forever, but I would go with something like a 4-1-4-1, and I would basically play across the wide part of the field as your four midfielders. I would go with basically Jordi Mihailović and Cole Bassett in the middle, and Omer Fernandez and Jonathan Lewis on the wings. I know that Lewis has been kind of like spotty and Calvin Harris has looked pretty good. But I think the idea, here's a crazy idea, which is try Calvin Harris up top instead of Navajo and give him a game off. That would be another possibility. And then your defensive midfielder is absolutely most certainly Ollie LaRaz, who I think has been really good. So that's my kind of play. There's another possibility where you go with Lewis and Harris on the wings, and you sit Omer Fernandez. But I kind of like what he gives you as a shuttler. So that's my take. Do you have any suggestions, Matt, or do we want to go to the next one?
I'd throw in Lamine Diok, to be honest, on this one. I don't think you bench Sebastian. I don't think you bench Keegan Rosenberry because he's the captain. I don't think that you can get away with that. I would have Sebi as a planned sub 60th, 65th minute, unless the game states one extreme or the other. To be honest, I would start Lamine Diok in this one. I would, and so the main reason for that, Mark, is then I would move Cole Bassett up to the 10, because then I think that gives him more availability. I would bench Georgie at this point. I think you need to roll out Hafton Navajo, because you still need to see if you can get something out of him for right now, and then also for the long term as well. And then so my other wide role, honestly, Mark, maybe I'd get some crap for this. I'd throw out Darren Yapi on this one. You know, I've been pondering this for a while, Mark, in terms of like the to the point of like how there's not enough production right now from Georgie and from Hoffa of what do the Rapids functionally lose by starting Darren Yapi up top. Because basically it's you go from a guy that you want to start scoring, that you believe can start scoring, that you need to start scoring, to a guy who the Rapids have no belief is going to start scoring. But you still get the same work rate defensively. You still get the same physicality. You still get the same energy. I do think Navajo is better in terms of he makes it easier for the other players around him in possession. But, you know, Darren Yapi does a lot of really good work on the wide role. He's just not goal dangerous, but neither is Omer Fernandez, neither is Jonathan Lewis, neither is, you know, et cetera. And I'd have Calvin Harris at the right wing position. If there's any two certainties I have about what is going to create its offense, Cole Bassett in a central role, and then Calvin on his preferred right. Right now, that's getting us something at the very least on that. And then we've got two questions that are related, Mark, so I'll kind of do them rapid fire right now. First from @DaddyShuttle. Asks a question, what will it take for our team to finish? And then friend of the pod, Eric Stinson, asks, why do the Rapids insist on playing an offense where they lack the pieces to implement it? We love to play the wide areas in the attacking third and then cross cut or cut back, but we don't have the players to finish those plays. Who is going to finish them? So, Mark, we already talked about how there's a component to what's not happening from an attacking standpoint once they are in transition to try and create opportunities. I do think that moment in the 62nd minute involving Rafael Navajo is a reflection that he's low on confidence. So how much of what's going on right now is just the frustration about the fact that things haven't worked, and then passing the ball off to pass the buck to somebody else because you don't have any faith in yourself. The only person who's really like, I want the ball, give me the ball, please, I will score the ball, is Georgie Mihailović at this point. And so far that's not working. And so we mentioned the frustrations that he has around this moment. I think on some level, like, somebody's going to need a fluke goal at this point. I think Cole Bassett has confidence given what he's done so far this season. I think Calvin Harris backs himself. I think there's some uneasiness in the body language, certainly from Hoffa and Georgie, but I think we can throw now Omer Fernandez in this one. So how much of this is maybe between the ears rather than between the white lines? I think is a valid question. There's certainly the question of them trying to implement the system. Going back to comments that I reported on from Chris Armas saying that there were multiple layers to his attacking approach and he didn't want to overload them with information and they also needed to be more fit in order to implement that system. So how much of that is it being a process with a new coach who's iterating on his tactical ideas that was going to take time to implement and it was going to take time for the players to catch up physically and mentally to implementing those? All valid questions for me. That being said, why did you not have a better plan out the gate to also have a plan to try and win games now in a simplified version of the offense and then also long-term build to what you wanted to rather than just having being so long-term minded such that you've blown big opportunities to get wins against good teams that have missed their best players like Houston, like Nashville, like Seattle? All valid questions in there. And I think it's the underlying concern that I think a lot of us have here, Mark, is that maybe Rafael Navajo isn't actually that good from a goal scoring standpoint. And the Rapids front office and the scouting team got caught up in his pressing statistics because that's something that they really cared about. And maybe there's a reason Omer Fernandez didn't have as much scuttlebutt around him as an MLS free agency. And Georgie and Sam Vines came back from European clubs who normally don't buy players at a certain valuation, who are on the fringe of their national team, and then a few years later sell them off as a massive loss. Maybe that's an indication that they know something that the Rapids didn't. Not that they're washed because they're still young players, but that they're not as good or as valued as they were previously. And then maybe Georgie's really good year that he had in Montreal was more a reflection of Wilfer Nancy, who's now one of the best coaches in MLS, won an MLS Cup with Columbus Crew, rather than what he did as a player. And maybe there's aspects of what Sam Vines did from a Vines back standpoint that are actually tied to Robin Fraser rather than his qualities as an individual, independent of other stuff going on around him. And maybe Omer Fernandez similarly is just a pressing monster who's really good at that, who had okay enough or false positive stats when it came to his attacking stuff going on. And then really, you know, there's the maybe secretly, Mark, the scouting team got caught up in something, got lost in the sauce, brought in a bunch of guys and assembled a team based on what they would hope they would become rather than what they actually are or actually will become. And maybe that also extends to the head coach and his tactical ideas as well, given his track record in the last four jobs that he's had. And maybe that is the this is fine part of the meme, Mark, where maybe all of this comes crashing down in the same way that Anthony Hudson's first year was wrought with hindsight, but had so much optimism and belief in the beginning. Anything else that we want to say, Rabbi, or can we get out of here?
I couldn't have said it better myself, Matt. Well said. I don't know how to get this team scoring in the final third quite yet, but I do know that they need to work on it. And we expect more of these players. And if they can't do it because of their talent level and the Rapids need to go out and get better players, in the interim, they need to work on playing better team ball in order to creating chances for themselves. Yeah.
Last thing that I'll say, Mark, is that I'm starting to wonder, there was a lot of debate when things didn't really go well for a signing or towards the end of Robin Fraser's tenure, debate about who is a Porik signing versus who is a Fraser signing and where there was a disconnect between those two and why that was and what that said about the player's long-term tenure with the club and everything. And so I'm kind of wondering, maybe in hindsight with the way that it happened, that Robin got forced into playing Navajo and then setting up a system that he didn't actually like, but that would take advantage of Navajo. So then maybe Navajo was really a poor signing rather than the two of them being in unison. I want to believe that a lot of the signings the Rapids have brought in, both of them are on the same page. And certainly, but you know, if we're going to dump one, you know, if we're going to pick which one it is in the case of Omer Fernandez is very clearly a Chris Armas signing. Sam Vines is very clearly a Rapids long-term tenure incumbent Porik Smith signing in the case of Sam Vines. And I'm starting to wonder, given what we've not seen, obviously, from Lamine Diak, whether or not Diak was a Rapids front office Porik signing that actually hasn't actually worked out with Chris Armas. And so maybe, Mark, some of the disconnect that we've seen right now is Porik trying to build a system around square pegs and Armas trying to fit it into his system of round holes. And maybe some of those don't jive with each other. Listeners, you can follow us collectively on Twitter at @soccer_rabbi, at @LWSMattPollard, and at @rapids96podcast@gmail.com. Check out our Substack, holdingthehighline.substack.com. You'll get news on how you support us, merch, all that good stuff, yada yada. And if you want to get at us with questions or engage with us, we are on Facebook. We are on Twitter, X. You can send us questions using the hashtag AskHTHL, and we will answer them on the podcast. Or if you've got something that takes more than 280 or however many characters we have at this point, you can email us at rapids96podcast@gmail.com. Rate, review, share, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Tell Rapids Curious and Soccer Curious friends about us as well to help grow us. If we're not on a podcatcher that you would like us to be on, get in touch, as I mentioned previously, and we'll do our best to get on those platforms. We will see you next week. Without further ado, here is the full post-game audio of Georgi Mihailovic, which hopefully will be enlightening.
Oh, peace. I forgot.
Hi, Georgi.
Hey.
Sorry. I've been better, too.
Yeah?
Yes. I've been worse.
You guys like getting me after these kinds of games?
We're easy guys.
Sorry?
We're nice guys.
Nice, huh?
And late.
We'll be constructive.
Perfect. We're here with Mitchell and Georgi Mihailovic. We'll start off with his general thoughts and we'll open the floor to questions.
I don't know where to begin. I'm not going to say anything about the referees. I'm not trying to get fined. But I think it shows a lot of personality to finish a game like we did. We're at home, and we don't want anything less than a win. And we're pushing for that no matter what. And maybe on another day we get a winner in the 96th minute instead of conceding a goal. But I think this type of personality is going to take us a long way.
Georgi, it seems like the press was better in creating more turnovers and then that leading to opportunities. What's working in terms of the system that Chris is still implementing this work in progress? What needs to be better?
Yeah, every game it's on a upward trajectory, I think. Yeah, today was pretty evident, especially in the first half, the way we press, and Chris harps a lot about how important that is to score goals from that. You know, we win the ball in these great areas. I think the next step is, you know, creating chances out of these mistakes from the other team. Yeah, but every week it's improving a lot.
Hi, Georgi, Keeper, just Team NBS Media. Just to follow up on that a bit, instead, the next step is to create those chances. It seems like it's just been really close all season. Is, I asked Chris Armas the same thing. Is there something that needs to be done in training? Is, or do you think it's just no more time to gel with there being so many new pieces on the team?
Yeah, it's, and in my position, that's frustrating, right? Because you brought in to create the goals, to score the goals, and when that's not happening, it seems like, you know, what am I doing? Am I doing something wrong? But then you go over, you know, the video and training and in the last games, and you actually think and you see that it's much better than you think originally. I think it's coming with time. You know, this is the most difficult part of the game. That's why the best players get the most money, because they're scoring the goals. That's the most difficult part. And yeah, this is just the final step to get us over that hump. And I think when that happens, we're going to be among the elite in the West.
You touched on it a little bit already, but just what does Coach tell you, and what do you tell the rest of the team? What do you kind of talk about in terms of nights like this, kind of building the character of this team?
Yeah, it's when it seems like the goal scoring is the last piece. I mean, this is the part in my game where it's the most fun. And I tried telling the team, I told them this week, and especially for myself too, is when we get in the final third, it's about expressing your creativity and having fun in these moments. I don't like defending, but I will defend. That's not why I'm here. But I'll do it no matter what, because it helps the team. But when we get into those final third moments, we have to show our creativity, express ourselves, and just enjoy that moment.
Money with his MLS debut tonight. What have you seen from him in terms of growth from the start of preseason to now? you two connecting on multiple chances tonight during the game? What have you just seen from him as a young player?
It's nice to see young players like him grow in such a short period of time. From the first time I met him to now, he's grown a lot. And I'm not sure how young he is, what his age is, but yeah, he doesn't play like he's really a young player. He plays with like experience, and it's good to see. And from my experience, the more minutes you get, the better you're going to become no matter what. And I know that when he gets more minutes, he's just going to keep growing.
Georgie, lots of set-piece opportunities last week and then this week. That two big free kicks, one that leads to a goal, one that goes into the wall. What are you seeing on some of those? What's Chris Sharpie doing to help you try and make those dangerous?
Are we including the penalty?
I wasn't going to bring it up, but if you'd like to talk about the penalty, I think the supporters would find that informative.
Yeah. I'll start with the penalty. That's my first penalty I missed in my career. And in a moment like that, it wasn't nice to swallow. But it happens to the best of the players, missing penalties in moments like that. But when it happens, you just forget about it and move on to the next play. Like you said, there was a free kick chance, and I didn't think about the penalty miss. My confidence was still where it needs to be. And whenever I get over a ball, I feel like I'm going to score no matter what. Sometimes that does, sometimes I don't. I work on free kicks a lot. The best player in the world, Messi, when he takes a free kick, it's like taking a penalty. It's that easy for him because he practices so much. And last week, it resulted in a goal. Today, not. But hopefully, next one does.
And then what do you guys think we need to do more to get Hafa involved, both in possession, to help him scoring goals as well from the run of play?
Yeah, it's not fun being the number 10 and when your forward's not scoring, because then I feel like I'm not doing my job. Like, my job is to provide for him. And I think that responsibility is on me a bit. And it's just about patience. We're still trying to find our ways together. You can say that this is maybe our 8th, 9th game together, including preseason. But it hasn't come yet, but I know it will. It's just a matter of time.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.